It's really interesting because we get to frame and we get to decide how we want to essentially how you know, what do we want our response to be to any situation. So if there's a great book by Michael Singer called The Surrender Experiment, and I love that aspect of surrender and realizing that there's, you know, he talks about that the universe has even more in store for you than you can imagine. And many times if we look at what is a setback or an obstacle or a struggle in that frame or paradigm, then it becomes something that's like, okay, there's a reason for this. And I look at joy as our GPS that we have in our lives, and it's constantly sort of moving us. We're attracted to joy and living in joy. And I think we either grow through joy or pain. And I look at pain as the guardrails that are on either side on our way towards joy. And those guardrails could be pretty narrow. So we have, then we're in alignment with what our joy is and how we're truly connected with our heads and our hearts and our higher purpose of what we're doing out in the world, and especially as entrepreneurs. Or the guardrails could be wider and we continue to get bonked on the head harder and harder. And I think that we keep getting lessons and bonked on the head until we realize what's going on here.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Before we start, I just want to share two quick things with you. If you have guest recommendations or stories that you think we should know about, shoot us an email at hello@unmistakablemedia.com. We love hearing from our listeners. And if you're looking for a keynote speaker for your event or want to bring our team at Unmistakable Creative to your event or organization for a workshop on creativity and productivity, visit unmistakablecreative.com/speaking, send us the details, and we'll be in touch. And as always, today's episode is brought to you by our friends at HostGator. Whether you're looking to start a new website or move an existing one, HostGator can help. They have 24/7 live support via phone, chat, and email, an easy-to-use website builder if you're not too tech-savvy, and if you want to move from an existing host to HostGator, they make it free and super simple. So visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off. Yannick, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Yeah, so, I was introduced to you by way of our mutual friend and former guest, Kamal Ravikant, but I also knew of your work and had heard your name many, many times over the years. I want to start with a question that I've always found has been very revealing and informative, and that is, what did your parents do for a living, and how did that influence the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
It massively influenced it. I mean, I'm grateful to my parents every single day. We're Russian immigrants and came over. I came over when I was about 3 years old from Russia, from Moscow, actually. And my dad, and my mom, and my grandmother came over, and my dad had about $256 in his pocket. Not much kind of command of the English language, and came over and they, they, like all immigrants, they went to work and didn't have that entitlement mentality and did whatever they need to do. But about 6 months into being here, he ended up starting his own medical equipment sales and service company because he was about to get fired from the hospital that he worked at, because they found out he was moonlighting on the side. And it's actually kind of funny because I asked him about that. I always knew that story, but then I asked him about that recently, and he even kept the letter from his supervisor that was super threatening, and because he was in the biomedical department, which so repairing medical equipment, and he would be off repairing medical equipment for the doctors for their private practice. And the ministers found out about it, and they're like, okay, you need to stop or you're going to be fired. And he took the route less taken, which is that entrepreneurial route. And then I grew up working in that medical equipment sales and service company, all through junior high school, you name it. 14 years old, I was telemarketing, calling on my own leads. And 16, the deal was I got a car if I went out and actually cold called and made sales. And yes, my dad in his very Russian accent is like, okay, Mr. Yannick, go make some sales. And literally, I got a used Toyota Corolla as my car. And I'd be the 16-year-old punk calling on 50-year-old doctors. So it massively influenced who I was.
Wow. One of the things that I think I found is very common is this sort of immigrant work ethic that results, I don't know, maybe it's just the byproduct of the immigrant experience. And I'm curious why you think that is. And the other question, you know, in a moment of potentially being fired, your dad responded in a somewhat positive light and turned that into something very powerful. And I'm curious why you think certain people respond that way based on, you know, all the people that you've been exposed to over the course of your life.
I love that, that immigrant success mentality. I mean, there's something like, I think it's like something like five times. I mean, I haven't seen the stats in a while, but when I saw them before, it's like five times as likely to become self-made millionaires than people who are born here in the U.S. Uh-huh. And, you know, I think part of that is a byproduct of who self-selects to actually make that immigration move, right? Because they're going to leave their friends, their families, everything that they know and start off so they're a little more maybe risk tolerant. And it was definitely my mom pushing my dad. My dad would tell me all the time that he was happy. He actually got out of the Russian army by playing ping pong. He was a really good ping pong player, like basically like Forrest Gump, and was like number five in Moscow. And so he was coaching and doing a little bit of work and just, you know, just happy. And my mom was the one who was really pushing for a better life for me. And it took them 6 years to get out of Russia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that other part, which is, you know, why I think they're successful is that they're just willing to do, they're willing to do anything. I mean, they really are.
I'm curious, you know, in the Russian culture, because in the Indian culture, you know, despite the fact that our parents are immigrants, we are raised with this sort of, you know, like constantly diminishing risk tolerance of, you know, and a narrative of, oh, really, you should become a doctor, lawyer, or engineer. And I'm curious, you know, in the Russian culture, is that part of the culture to have this sort of, hey, don't waste this immigrant opportunity on some crazy gamble?
Well, so we're also, you know, Russian Jews, which is how we got out of Russia. And so in that Jewish culture, it's very much that, you know, you mentioned the doctor, lawyer, accountant. I call that the Jewish hat trick. It's one of those, or the Holy Trinity for Jews. And it's, you know, when I kind of decided to go off on my own, back in 2000, and leave my dad's company. It was actually a really hard decision. So I grew up, and originally my plan was to take over my company, my dad's company. And actually, Gary Vaynerchuk and I have a pretty similar story, which is really funny. Uh-huh. And I was able to learn direct response marketing. It's actually a doctor of mine, one of my clients, who gave me Jay Abraham's work and like just loved it and started applying direct response marketing. And you know, it's been an hour, 2 hours a day learning everything I could about that. And I used it to grow my dad's business. And then I just got this itch to do something on my own. And it was really hard to leave the family business and then also to just do something that my dad was like, you know, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, he literally, even after I left, this is an absolutely true story. He doesn't remember this, but I put out a program teaching people how to do what I was doing, because at that point, my very first online product was instant sales letters, and that did really well. And then people are like, wow, how'd you do that? And could you teach me how to do that? So I started teaching people how to sell their own content and expertise. And then it was literally on tapes. And my dad is listening to this tape with me in his car. He's listening, looking at me, listening. He ejects it. He's like, people pay for this bullshit. And, you know, it's just like, you don't have that. They just, you know, they didn't understand it. And so it was fascinating, because I think one of the biggest things that we learn, I think, in our lifetimes is to truly follow our own voice and to, you know, just do what we want to do and not live for the sake of our parents and for, you know, and it's hard because if you feel obligated in some ways, especially because they presented you with this amazing opportunity and, you know, that wasn't certainly, I don't think was his goal for me. And I just recently interviewed him with my brother, which is great because we did I call them these legendary legacy interviews. And I did one with my uncle before he passed. And, you know, I asked my dad about this because my stepbrother worked there. My younger brother worked there and he just exited from a VC backed company. And he's like, you know, my original dream was for everyone to work together. And he's like, I'm so happy it didn't work out. And it was actually really cool to see that. You know, because everything does work out in that right way.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that because I know you wrote about that in the book. But before we get there, I want to ask you another question. You know, having been raised by entrepreneurial parents, what advice would you give to parents listening to this about raising entrepreneurial kids?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this because we actually put on a family event for kids every year. So my kids are 11 and 9 right now, and I literally, you know, created, like a lot of things, I believe in almost like scratching your own itch, and I created a family event just because I wanted them to be exposed to some of these ideas and to, you know, get them thinking about this. And I think some of the things, so I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurial parents, and one thing is that we're concerned with that, you know, the struggle is what made us. So it's, you know, by taking away, a lot of times we're like, okay, if we've already made it, then we want to make it easier for our kids. But a lot of times it's that striving, it's the dealing with challenges that actually makes you who you are. And then the other side is if you make it too difficult for your kids, it can turn into resentment and them, you know, turning away from you in some way. So it really is this unique balancing that you want to try and do. And I will, you know, what I try and do is put them in situations where they have to, like, I think about 21st century skills. Mm-hmm. What's, you know, you don't necessarily need to know facts today. We have Google, we have whatever that, you know, pretty quickly we can figure out who won the Super Bowl 18 years ago or what the square root of, you know, 81 is or whatever it is. It's, you need to know how to think, you need to know how to creatively put concepts together, you need to know how to be innovative, how to solve challenges, you know, how to do the things that really are entrepreneurial thinking, which is starting with an idea and getting it done. And so that is one of the things that I continue to hopefully expose my kids to. And so if they ask me a question, I don't normally tell them the answer, at least right away. I want them to think about it themselves. I'm like, so what do you think? And I don't even care what their answer is. I simply want them to know or to find out their thinking process and to think through that. We're also always looking at, so I love exposing them to just unique opportunities and unique places. And I try and surround them with my work and the people that are in my life so that they can see that there's other ways of fulfilling what you want to do and, you know, having your passion really drive what you want to do into the world. Just recently we were in the BVIs actually this past week, and we ended up sinking an old World War II ship that was turned into an artificial reef and an amazing sculpture of this giant kraken. And it's going to become a marine preserve. And it's also going to become a viable sort of economic initiative for the local community. And it was started on the project that started literally last year, almost pretty much to the date. And so my kids were there for the sinking of the ship. And it's just a great example of how to take an idea from a sketch and a concept into actually getting it done. And you know, anytime I can expose them to that, the better.
Mm-hmm. What do you see the role of education being in the lives of your kids, based on the fact that you're an entrepreneur and you've been exposed to a lot of people who probably haven't had a truly formal education?
Yeah, my wife and I definitely we definitely kind of spar on this a little bit, because I'm a product of public school education, so is she. Uh-huh. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe there's something better. And she's like, well, okay, let's figure out what is that better. And so far we haven't quite figured out what that is, but what we have both concluded is that we have the, you know, it's up to us to supplement the education. So we're in a school system. We're probably one of the best school systems in the country, but I still don't feel like they're adequately prepared for what's next. So we supplement it. We actually have something we call our 13 Silver Keys, which is a once a week. We actually created almost like an offsite kind of workshop or retreat. We created as a family a couple years ago. What's it mean to be a silver, and what's that look like? And we literally had post-it notes spread out all over the wall and put up all these ideas and values and thoughts. And so we landed on these 13 silver keys. And then once a week on Sundays, we'll talk about what they are and think about what happened from a point of view of, you know, how did this show up and what did this inspire. So for instance, like one of them is make magic, and it's actually one of my favorite ones. And it's one of the kids' favorite ones. And they really got this when we were actually looking at summer camps for the kids. And we're driving up to the Poconos, and I was talking about, okay, you know, what you think about is it really shows up in your world. And they're like, okay, yeah, whatever. And I'm like, no, really, what kind of animal do you want to see? And they're like, a horse. I'm like, okay, we'll see a horse. And then my daughter's like, I don't want to see a dog being walked. I'm like, okay. And you know, one of the rest stops, we saw that, and we passed a horse on the way, you know, not a big deal. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, well, you know, my wife's like, I want to see a penguin, you know, like really trying to try to throw me off. I'm like, no problem, we'll see a penguin. And of course I'm thinking like, all right, well, I'm not sure we're gonna see a penguin, but I totally trust that we'll see a penguin. Uh-huh. And literally we're touring one of the camps, and so I'm like looking around, I'm like, okay, there's gonna be a penguin here. And we only went into one bunk so that they could kind of show us an example of what the kids' bunks looks like. And then sitting on some kid's bunk was a picture of a penguin. I'm like, Miss, oh, his name is Missy. I'm like, Miss, come over here, check it out. She's like, oh my God. And so I told the kids that on the way home, and then they got a little more extravagant. And my daughter's like, I want to see a polar bear. I'm like, no problem, we'll see a polar bear. and I said, I want to see an ice cube. And so we got off, there's a ton of traffic on the way home. We got off on this little side road and stopped in a convenience store. And as we're walking into the door of the convenience store, on the side was this ice machine, and a sticker on there was an ice cube with a polar bear inside. And my daughter's name is Zoe. I'm like, Zoe, check this out. I'm like, Zoe, check this out. What do we got here? And she's like, oh my gosh. And, from then on, they were, they were hooked. Like these make magic moments, these intentional awareness, like almost like creating your own reality in a way, or these synchronicities and things that show up. And so that's one of them. And then we have 12 others that, once a week. So it's kind of based on Ben Franklin's 13 virtues, where every week you'd work on a virtue. Mm-hmm. And so that's become part of our lives, and something that we continue to, could be watching a movie devoted to something like Dream Big. It could be, last week's was Keep Learning and Growing. And so we'll talk about, how did we learn, or what did we grow? And, they both learned how to snorkel last week. So we'll talk about that, and just other things that really just help them have intentional ways that I think we teach our kids. And that to me is some of the most important work that we can do.
Wow. So, one of the things you mentioned earlier was this notion of struggle. And I know you even referenced this idea of struggle in the book, the fact that our struggle has often unmade us. And you said, tons of people, entrepreneurs, have gone through depression, have gone through issues of a lot of challenges. One, I'm curious what those moments have been in your own life, and how you got out of them, and what advice you'd give to people who are in those moments in their lives.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because we get to frame and we get to decide how we want to, essentially what do we want our response to be to any situation? So if, there's a great book by Michael Singer called The Surrender Experiment. And I love that aspect of surrender and realizing that there's, he talks about that the universe has even more in store for you than you can imagine. And many times, if we look at what is a setback or an obstacle or a struggle in that frame or paradigm, then it becomes something that's like, okay, there's a reason for this. And I look at joy as our GPS that we have in our lives, and it's constantly sort of moving us. We're attracted to joy and living in joy. And I think we either grow through joy or pain. And I look at pain as the guardrails that are on either side on our way towards joy. And those guardrails could be pretty narrow. So we have, then we're in alignment with what our joy is and how we're truly connected with, our heads and our hearts and our higher purpose of what we're doing out in the world, and especially as entrepreneurs. Or the guardrails could be wider, and we continue to get bonked on the head harder and harder. And I think that we keep getting lessons and bonked on the head until we realize what's going on here. And for me, that really came to a front where, about 9-10 years ago, I was in a spot where, just online marketing space, digital marketing, doing really well, making a lot of money, helping a lot of people, outside looking in, you'd think that I kind of had it made and it was a perfect sort of life. And then I asked myself, am I truly happy? And the real answer was no. I wasn't happy, because I thought there was something more I could be doing. And so I journaled quite a bit. And actually, that's one of my favorite processes, and journaling about thinking about, okay, what would be my ultimate end-all, be-all kind of business or expression of what I want to do. And And it was, oh, I'm going to create something called Maverick Business Adventures, which is going to be adventure travel trips for entrepreneurs. We'd have these amazing adventures. We'd do business sessions in the middle of nowhere, and we'd, you know, have some sort of charity component. And I'm like, okay, that's, you know, that's it. And these three interconnected circles of a dollar sign, a happy face, and a heart was kind of what the original notion of it was. And then so fast forward about $400,000 in, my wife's like, so what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. And I don't know if you've ever had this happen when you're having multiple things going on. And I lost pretty much all my passion for what I was doing before in the publishing side of things. And I just wasn't happy there. But that was the real moneymaker, and that was the cash driver. So that was continuing to sort of go down as my passion waned there. But that was also the open checkbook that was paying for this other sort of experiment that I really wanted to do. But the business model wasn't right. There's a lot of things that weren't right there. And it actually ended up, I ended up selling my Aston Martin to pay for payroll and to pay for some of the things that were going on. And that was that final sort of bonk on the head that I needed to be like, all right, so, you know, what are you doing? And that was a really dark time, I think, when, you know, that's when I came across Kambal's work. And I can't remember, he and I had met before that, but really his work took on a more important aspect to what I was doing, because here's someone else who went through a really dark time. And then I just started thinking about, you know, what is it that really made me happy continue to give me meaning in my life at that point. And it forced me to like extract myself, my identity, my self-worth from my net worth at that point. And that's a really hard thing for entrepreneurs, because our identities are so wrapped up in our businesses. Mm-hmm. And so it forced me to really go back over 15, 20 years of studying success principles and what had I done before. And I turned that into this, you know, I call it this return path to joy, happiness, and bliss. And it was just like really basic, like building block stuff. Like, you know, what if I had a great day, would that then turn into a great week and a great month and so forth? And it really just forced me to go back and think about what were those pieces. And I broke them down into these 9 M's around meaning. You know, if I would write down, some of these are, you know, everyone's heard these before, but if I would write down and think about what I was grateful for in my journal, If I would write somebody a thank you note, I felt better about it. If I would, you know, just make a difference in someone's life, I'd be happier. If I had movement, you know, as another M, like if I did something athletic, you know, I'd be happier. If I had more mindfulness in my world, I actually started experimenting with meditation at that point. I had always been, never been open to meditation before. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I had like, I don't know, 100, 200 ideas running around in my head. And I'm like, all right, I can never do this. And I had the opportunity to interview Russell Simmons, and you know, he's ADHD all the way, and I'm like, okay, if this guy could do it, I feel like I could do it. and so I had a week before my interview, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give this a go, and then it stuck. I mean, it's been like, I don't know, three and a half years or something like that, and that's been really, really powerful. And then so, you know, pieces like that to really, really just bring you back to what is most important. And I'm actually so incredibly thankful for that time, because it forced me to think about what is my bigger why. Like my why wasn't to create an adventure travel company. It was what we talk about now as our mission, is to change the way business is played. And then it forced me to even go back. And I mean, we changed the name of the organization to call it Maverick 1000, because it's this idea of 1,000 suns who can each light another 1,000 suns that can really change the world in some way through entrepreneurship. And I would never have gotten there if it succeeded right away. And then also it gave me this unique opportunity of meeting some incredible icons like Richard Branson and, you know, Tony Hsieh and Rich Teerling, the former CEO of Harley Davidson, and, you know, you name it. I learned all these little pieces from each of them about what it truly meant to create an organization that mattered and did something big into the world, and kind of pulled all these little pieces together into what I call the evolved enterprise.
Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by DesignCrowd. Unmistakable Creative listeners have used DesignCrowd for logo, web, and graphic design. Here's how it works. You go to designcrowd.com and you set up your design brief, and you'll get submissions from anywhere between 60 to 100 designers from around the world. If you like the designs you get, you can then approve payment. If you don't like what you get, you can go back to the crowd and ask for more, or ask for your money back. To see what other Unmistakable Creative listeners have designed and save $100 on your first project, visit designcrowd.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for $100 off. Today's episode is also sponsored by our friends at HostGator. They host your website and they have 24/7 live support via phone, chat, and email. An easy-to-use website builder if you're not tech-savvy, one-click WordPress installs, and if you want to switch from an existing host to HostGator, it's free and it's simple. And because you're an Unmistakable Creative listener, you're getting 30% off all of their hosting packages. So visit HostGator.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout for 30% off. So I do want to spend quite a bit of time talking about the idea of the evolved enterprise. You know, this is something I'm curious about. So, you know, you mentioned selling, having to sell the Aston Martin as being a low point. And I'm guessing there are probably some people rolling their eyes as they heard that.
You know, poor Yannick, right?
You know, and, you know, not at all meant as a criticism on you, but this is, it's a segue to a question. This is something I've noticed in my life, and I'm curious if you've noticed it in yours. It's that, you know, when you get to a certain high point, the fall is so much worse because you're falling from so much higher than it would be. So, like, if it wasn't selling the Aston Martin and you had to sell, you know, like a Nissan Altima, which is what I drive, like, I wonder if the impact would be nearly as devastating. And I'm just curious what your experience has been with that.
So I wrote a really interesting blog post just, I don't know, maybe 9 months ago or so about it, because it took a little while to really, really process it and think through it, because a lot of times we're so attached to, you know, that was kind of a symbol of my success. And when I sold it, I wasn't even like that sad. I mean, it wasn't like, oh no, boo hoo. It was like, you know, it's a thing. And I was actually choosing at that moment between selling my ticket for Virgin Galactic, which is a suborbital space flight, or the Aston Martin. And you know, one was an experience that's sort of out into the future and very nebulous. And, you know, it's getting closer and closer. I've been a ticket holder for a long time. And then the Aston Martin, which was a thing. And, you know, I knew things come and go, and that wasn't the really most important part of what I had to have in my life. But it did take me a little while. So I was driving, you know, a bit of a clunker. It was like this old, we had a third car that was just a SUV, like an Acura MDX, an older version model. And then it finally, you know, when I got to the point where I could actually truly appreciate it and really, you know, just, you know, take great care of it and wash it and keep it clean and just really appreciate it for what it was. That's when things started opening up again. Like, you know, I could have went out and bought another car the next day if I really wanted and leased it but that wasn't like, I wasn't interested in that. I was like, okay, let's see what is the real sort of, what do I need to sort of sit with and learn here? And you know, after that, I might see someone driving a really hot car, be like, wow, I hope they really enjoy that car. And then it got to this point where I'd start like, and this sounds maybe a little weird, I'd start like blessing them and being like, yeah, I'm just so grateful for them to have that car and enjoy it on a beautiful spring day. And it just, you know, it just totally changed and things started opening up. And I remember reading a journal entry of mine talking about my 40th birthday. Uh-huh. And this is when I, it's really kind of came full circle where I was reading about, it's kind of my perfect day on my 40th birthday. And it was like, you know, who I was hanging out with, how much money was in the bank, what I was doing, what I was driving. It was like, you know, a blue Fisker Karma car and all these things. And then, you know, I read it on my actual 40th birthday or right around there. And my wife's looking at me and she's like, you know, are you upset that, you know, all these things didn't quite come true? And I'm like, you know, not really, because I looked at it and the essence of pretty much all of them were correct. Like, you know, the money in the bank was really a reflection of the freedom to do what I want with who I wanted and be able to work on what I wanted to do. And then the car was more a reflection of driving something that reflected my personality and what I wanted. And so I just recently got a Mini Cooper Clubmen. I don't know if you've seen those, but they're the same sort of wheel height or I don't know, size, whatever, as a regular Mini Cooper, like the little tiny ones, mm-hmm. but they're just extended, so they're four doors. And it was just like, you know, it just really fit. It's actually blue. And it fit, it just really fit my personality. It's like kind of quirky and fast and you know, kind of just a lot of fun to drive. And it was just this perfect sort of expression of who I was at the time. And so I really got into having more of the essence of goal setting and not being attached to what is the exact thing. Yeah. And even in my journal, I read about, you know, who I'm hanging out with and I couldn't have planned it even better. Like on my 40th birthday, I was hanging out with Richard Branson at Virgin Galactic. And then next week we were off to go do a safari in South Africa or Kenya. I can't remember where, but so, you know, I didn't write about that, like even better. So that whole idea of the universe has something more in store for you than you even believe.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because that idea of how you set goals, you know, related to the essence of what you want really struck me. That was the section of the book that I knew I definitely wanted to actually spend quite a bit of time talking about, because this quote in particular struck me. You said, by simply having no attachment, you're free. Easier said than done, because as entrepreneurs, we're typically so intermeshed into our business that our identities are wrapped up tightly into whether it's a success or a failure. So the question for me is, how do you do that while remaining committed to a goal? And also, like, let's say that you were to walk somebody through the goal setting process, you know, somebody listening to this, if they wanted to go through that process of what do I want my 40th birthday to look like, how would you guide me through that?
Well, so it's all, to me, it's been all about the essence and you know, what if we break down every single goal that we have. And I literally just had this conversation with a guy last week. He's like, I want to be a billionaire. That's what's written on my wall, on my mirror. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay. Why? And you know, it's, and he, you know, he started talking about what he could do with it and how it would make him feel. And then, you know, he just kept exploring it a little bit more. And I'm like, okay, so the real essence is, again, you know, the freedom to do what you want with whom you want, being able to serve who you want. And, you know, his ultimate goal is to be happy. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, well, guess what? You don't need that $1 billion. But for you now, you've wrapped your mind around, unless I get the billionaire status, the B status, I'm not going to be happy. Uh-huh. Like that puts you in a really tough spot.
Sure.
And so one of my favorite books, you know, at this time that I was sort of going through, you know, a pretty big, I guess, evolutionary leap was, it's called The Great Work of Your Life. And I don't know if you've ever seen it or heard of it.
No, but it, I saw that in the references. Like, I went through your book and I was like, okay, books to order.
Yeah. I mean, I love books. I mean, to me, like, I'll go through about a book a week. And to me, books are just, I mean, you could have a distillation of somebody's 15, 20, 10 years, whatever it is, of their life put into a book. And I think we grow through either the books or the resources or materials that we learn from, the people that we meet or the experiences that we have. And I just love a great book, and especially going back to it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so this book, The Great Work of Your Life by Stephen Cope, explores the Bhagavad Gita, which is, you know, one of our most ancient spiritual texts. And one of the biggest, I guess, insights from that book is that we can't be attached to the outcomes. We're only welcome to the, essentially, to our labor. So if we put our full heart and soul into something, we're not able to be attached to the fruit. So we're not entitled to the fruit of our labor. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of a big deal for entrepreneurs, is, and that's the, you know, the sales goals or the quotas or the, you know, or the, you know, I want my company to be a whatever, $5 million company or $2 million or $100,000, whatever it is. All of a sudden when we start getting attached to that outcome, everything we can truly contribute is by putting our full heart and soul into something. And this was a huge actual shadow for me. And you know, this was, so Carl Jung's work on shadows, which is the kind of characteristics or aspects of ourselves that we don't really want to share with the public or make known or bring out into the light, which is why they're called shadows. And for me, my biggest shadow was not putting 100% into anything. And it really, really struck me, because I started looking at this and looking at the history of it, I mean, I remember, you know, back in high school, just kind of sliding by, and then college, I'd go out the night before and get really drunk and come in smelling of bourbon and be the last one into like stats class and borrow a pencil and walk out of there like a, you know, the B or B minus or whatever it was. And not that I was like so, so smart, but I was just kind of a good short-term learner, and I would, you know enough to get by. And, but I never gave myself, you know, full commitment. And same with like the products and services I was putting out there, that they're great. I mean, I live by this motto and this value system of I get rich by enriching people 10x to 100x what they pay me in return. So it wasn't like we're delivering shoddy stuff. It was good stuff, but I wasn't truly putting my full heart and soul into it, because then it gave me the excuse that, oh, if it didn't quite work out, then, you know, now I have this reason why. And that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So one other question I have sort of about the life that you've built and the relationships in particular that you've formed is that you've managed to connect and build relationships with some highly influential and highly successful people, and also, you know, make them a part of the work that you do. So two questions actually come from that. One is, you know, how have you managed to establish these kinds of relationships? And the other actually is based on a conversation that I had with Justine Musk, Elon's ex-wife, about the psychology of visionaries. You know, you may have probably come across this. She wrote a piece on Quora. She wrote a response on Quora to some student who had put up a question saying, how can I be great like Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, or Richard Branson? And given that you have, you know, had a front row seat to somebody like Richard Branson, I'm curious, that level of accomplishment, is that accessible to like the average person? Or is there something that just separates these people that, you know, there's something to aspire to, but we can't ever be?
Yeah, I saw Justine's response on Quora. I thought that was really fascinating about what kind of commitment you know, Elon has made and to put into it, and what that really looks like. And, you know, my frame has been around Richard, because he's sort of, he's the person that I wouldn't say modeled, but he's been my biggest mentor in a way, of just, we share a lot of archetypes and a lot of characteristics, and, you know, from the adventure side to the entrepreneurial side, to the impact side and wanting to make a difference. And so I'm probably skewed because I've seen Richard now from when he's, you know, gotten a little older. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe it's a little bit different, that full on intense commitment. You know, I haven't seen that side of him where he's working 18 hours a day or anything like that. And I don't know if that he ever truly had that, but you know, again, I don't have a front row seat to that from before. And, you know, just in conversations with him from what he would do before, I mean, he always would make his life more than just his business, and his kids would be around all the time, and he'd take meetings on his houseboat, and, you know, the family was there and so forth. So he really did try and interconnect his life in that way. I do believe that we are all here with a really unique set of talents and skills, and almost like a blueprint for what we were designed to do. And as, I don't know, as strange as that might sound, or maybe out there, like I really do believe that. And that comes from, you know, again, that book, the Great Work of Your Life. So Steve's talking about Dharma and our true path and what is our purpose. It's like when we align in that, that's when we do truly put out our greatest work. And it doesn't even feel like work. It just feels like what we were meant to do. And that only comes from, I think, a lot of self-exploration, a lot of getting, just being really candid and clear about who we are and what we were meant to do. And then also allowing the part of ourselves that has the big dreams to not get shut down by it. And sometimes, you know, your dreams will grow as you reach the next sort of stepping stone or building block for what you have going on in your world. I remember a conversation I had with Richard a couple years ago on his other island on Mosquito, and we were talking about, I'm like, so, you know, did you ever think that your brand would be, you know, these 350, 400 brands? And he's like, you know, Originally, I didn't. And then there's an article that came out in Ad Age or something like that, talking about how elastic the Virgin brand was. And then all of a sudden, it kind of gave him permission to be like, oh, yes, well, you know, now I'm going to make it all these other things as well. So sometimes you know, as you're doing what you're doing, you get permission in some way, or you get validation that what you're doing has a bigger aspect to it. So I don't know if Elon thought, I'm going to go to Mars. This is his very first thing that he ever dreamt about when he was, I don't know, 14 years old or whatever it was. But, you know, PayPal became maybe the fuel for what that was. But I do think that he is someone who has a huge aspiration, and he knows that each of the pieces that he's building right now are the building blocks to what his biggest aspiration is.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, let's do this. I want to spend the rest of our time talking about this notion of an evolved enterprise. And, you know, what I'd like to do is, one, you know, it would define what an evolved enterprise is, and then look at it through these three lenses that you mentioned at the beginning of the book: transactional, transformational, and transcending. And have you explained, you know, what those each mean and how they apply?
Yeah, absolutely. So evolved enterprise, as I said, came really through putting these building blocks and pieces together through this journey. And to me, an evolved enterprise is a company that is almost the soul of the business is aligned with their greater purpose. And, you know, as a business is a separate entity. So if we can have a soul, why can't a business have a soul? And it puts your customers, they want to buy more and be associated and spread the word with your bigger mission. Your team members want to be aligned and with the bigger purpose of what you're doing. It gets you fired up and out of bed and excited for the bigger role that you can play. And it also, the best part about it is it actually improves your bottom line. And, you know, there's a lot of data showing that this is the greatest shift that's happening right now. And it's happening from the inside out and the outside in. And the outside in is buying criteria is changing. Customers are willing to, not willing, but they want to buy from companies that have a greater purpose and a greater mission. And they're changing their buying behavior. They're switching brand preferences. Companies on the S&P 500 list are staying on their for less amount of time. Companies are out there who are taking on mega giants like Warby Parker took on Luxottica, which had something like 80% of the optical marketplace, and are winning and beating them, and were able to get to a $1 billion valuation through using some of these principles. And then inside out is millennials, who are, you know, one of the biggest groups out there, especially of new employees and team members and even people that have a huge sort of buying block, that they want to work for companies that have this mission or purpose, and they're willing to even get paid less for it. So it really is like this perfect storm coming. And so an evolved enterprise is able to truly, you know, allow you to design your company around the greater purpose and joy and meaningful impact that you want to put out into the world. It's like, how could we, it almost seems like too good to be true, honestly. It's mm-hmm. like, how could we make more and do better in the world?
Yeah. Yeah. So what about those three sort of ideas of transactional, transformational, and transcending?
Yeah. Yeah. So how do we, you know, that's the ultimate goal, is to get into a transcending company. So transactional is pretty much what it sounds like. It's I got, you know, an onion and you have an onion and we're both selling onions. And, you know, what do we do to make our onion possibly better? You know, we can price it better. And a lot of times it turns into almost a commodity, and commodities get beaten down into lowest price competition. And then someone tries to create a brand around it. And then they try and differentiate their onion. But it still becomes very transactional. There's not much brand loyalty. It's you know, very much just an exchange of you have cash and I have an onion and you want my onion, and so there's not that much there. At a transformational level, companies, every stakeholder or community that a company touches, like their identity actually changes and transforms. So whether it's the team members, customers, investors, the community that they're serving, their customers, it's like their identities truly change. I remember like Mike Kosky from Tom's would be talking about how when they started selling Tom's shoes, that the identity of the purchaser would change, because, you know, Tom's original thing was, and still is, you buy a pair of shoes that they give a pair of shoes to someone in need. And he never, by the way, even expected it to get as big as it is. And now they have an amazing sort of logistical issue with the amount of giving and what they do. But it did change and transform the identity of the customer, because they're able to vote with their wallet and know that the purchase that they made a difference in some way. Mm-hmm. And we get to that transformational level, like the identity changes, and there's ways of building up essentially a tribe and a community of people that love what you're doing, that they want to spread it. They become unpaid advocates. And I remember talking to Dale Partridge, who we brought in for a Maverick meeting, and he was co-founder of a little company called Sevenly.org, which originally started off selling t-shirts, and they'd be on sale for 7 days, and they would donate $7 from every t-shirt to one of seven big sort of umbrella causes that they were supporting, so hence the name Sevenly. And he told us that 80% of their new customer acquisition came from social shares. And I found that stat pretty incredible, because that means that we can spend way less in advertising. We have our customers out there as our biggest advocates, and they're able to do things that bigger competitors couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then the final level is transcending. And that is, we could transcend what business could even be. And so it becomes a win-win-win-win across all these different facets. Almost like if you look at a diamond or any polished jewel, there's all these different facets, and it truly becomes a piece of art that we're creating, and our business becomes our canvas that we're building this artwork. And a couple of interesting examples. I have 11 different, I call them evolved enterprise impact models in the book, and one of them is called Empowered Employment. And there's a company called Ultra Testing, which will hire people that are on the autism spectrum scale in order to do what they do is like quality control testing and across browsers and so forth. So kind of repetitive tasks. And what stereotypically they found is people on the autism spectrum scale, that they have more attention to detail, they're okay with repetitive tasks and so forth. So they took what could be a very much a disadvantage for a workforce and turned it into a competitive advantage. And so it magnifies their unique aspect of what they do in the marketplace. So they're providing hopefully a superior service to other companies, and doing it with helping an underserved marketplace for employees. And to me, that's a really unique way of transcending what a business can be.
Wow. Well, this has been truly, truly mind-blowing. So I have one last question, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think what makes someone or something unmistakable is that they truly embrace their difference and their uniqueness. Each person is this incredible mosaic of what they've every little quirk that they have and characteristic and life experience. And a lot of times we somehow dim our uniqueness in order to maybe try and fit in or try and be like the crowd in some way. And it's when we finally learn how to embrace what makes us beautifully special, and that ultimate unique, just optimal self. And so part of it is genetic in a way, like almost like what were we designed to do or what were we meant to do. And then part of it is this continual process of evolving ourselves in a very conscious way, and almost like polishing a diamond. So you take that rough diamond, and it has all the characteristics of a diamond, but it has to be polished and cut by an expert diamond cutter in order to get that brilliance out of it. And a lot of times, actually every time, every single person has that brilliance within them. And sometimes it's hiding from maybe drinking too much, maybe other vices, whatever it is, because sometimes we're really scared of our own radiance and our own just brilliance and letting that get out there. Mm.
Well, this has been just absolutely fantastic. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
So the best part would be to go to evolvedenterprise.com for the book. We have a unique kind of deal right now where we're building another village in cooperation with Village Enterprise, and they teach micro entrepreneurs how to get out there and actually support themselves in East Africa. And we've actually already impacted one entire village of 50 micro entrepreneurs, and we're on toward hopefully our next village and many more. So there's a limited edition package that's available there, or of course Amazon or anywhere else that you buy books is Evolved Enterprise is available there.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.